Many of you know us well enough to know that we have a dog named Ginger. And I pick on Ginger sometimes. It's just another reason she should be irritated with me. Right now, she could be irritated with me because she's in a kennel back in the house where she stays while we're gone. She's in a kennel in the garage. But when we get home in a little while, she is going to be excited to see us beyond just getting out of the kennel. You know that because even after you let her out and bring her back in, she will come up to us, the four of us in the family, and she will lay at our feet. She'll nuzzle the side of our leg. Some of it is because she loves to be scratched behind the ear. But when Carol does her own Bible study and maybe sits in the blue chair where she sits, Ginger will get up in the chair with her. Now, Ginger's not a little dog. She's at least as big as a sled dog, if not larger. She's not huge, but there's not much room in the chair when she gets up in the chair with you. But she loves to spend the rest of the day with us. She'll sleep with us if we let her do that too. It's something I don't ask her to do. Anyway, she wants to be with us. Every time I walk up the stairs to go into my office upstairs, she hears me, knows where I'm going, and she runs right to my side. I go in the office, I sit down, and she curls up right up there next to my chair. She doesn't ask anything of me up there, but she runs to be there with me. When the boys go outside, she can hardly be restrained and is dying to go play wherever they are and to run. We have little ones come over, babies and toddlers. They climb over her, pull on her ears, tug on her lips. And she very sweetly tolerates it. In fact, she'll roll over so that they can scratch her belly. When you think about a canine and the actual potential in an animal like that, it's amazing how kind and sweet she is. I complain about her, wrongly, of course. Even if it's accurate, I shouldn't complain. But you know, she doesn't care what I look like, what we look like. She doesn't care if our hair is combed or I put on anything that looks decent. She doesn't care if I'm wearing a tie or a ragged t-shirt. She doesn't care whether the car is clean or dirty, whether the living room's been vacuumed or not. She doesn't care how much money we make. She doesn't care if I've lost weight or gained weight this month. She doesn't care how popular I am with other people or our family is. She is kind to us. She's excited to be with us. She doesn't even care how badly we treat her sometimes. Because, of course, when you're wearing something decent, you don't want the dog hair on you, and you push her away and push her, sit. Because you don't want to mess up your clothes. Even though she has no concept of how she would mess up our clothes, even in that, she comes back, tail wagging, smile on her face, and she'll nudge us again and want us to scratch her behind her ears. And she never gets enough of that. And even when we won't give it to her, she lays right there next to us. She greets everyone who comes with too much warmth and enthusiasm. And those of you who visited me knows how she'll nudge you and won't leave you alone. And to my embarrassment, I wish I had a dog that behaved better than that. Like I said, I pick on her too much. But when I look at these characteristics, just as you full well know of the dogs you've seen, wouldn't it be wonderful if I could act like that? If I could treat everyone with warmth and enthusiasm, if I could be as absolutely unjudgmental as my dog is, if I could forget that I think I've been slighted, like she forgets, if I can ignore that sometimes it feels like you're pushed away from things, or somebody doesn't want you around. Wouldn't it be great if we could act that good and come back with just as much smile and just as much kindness and just as non-judgmental? if we could greet everyone with non-judgmental warmth and enthusiasm. Luke chapter 7. Thank you for your reading this morning. In Luke chapter 7, Jesus has a discussion with Simon. Simon was a Pharisee. And Jesus had a point, as Riley read for us a bit ago. Jesus had a point he was trying to get Simon to think about. And he asked him a question after he gave him an answer. In verse 44, he asked him a question. Do you see this woman? Simon.
Yes, Lord.
I have something to say to you. Say it, Lord. And he tells him that little parable we just heard about the two men who were forgiven their debts. And he says, do you see this woman? Because Simon hadn't seen her. He'd seen her, but he hadn't seen her, if you know what I mean. He had the visible sight, and he had the judgmental conclusion, both against the woman and against Jesus. If this man was a prophet, he'd know what kind of woman that was, who was, oh man, could you imagine what she was doing in a public setting? Women were not supposed to touch men. Men were not supposed to touch women in public settings, especially outside your family. This woman is at Jesus' feet, and she is weeping and weeping. She has brought her finest perfume, and she is wiping his feet, and she is weeping over his feet. Simon, do you see her? Because he hadn't seen her, except to judge what she was. He hadn't seen who she was. He hadn't seen her. He hadn't seen her. Do you see this woman? Every day we go by hundreds of people. We drive by them on the highway. We see them in the stores. We run into them in our neighborhoods. We pass by them in schools. Do we see them? What a great question. Simon, do you see this woman? Jesus is doing this over and over again to our benefit. In Mark chapter 10, he's dealing with a huge crowd. Verse 46, they came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho, his disciples and a large crowd, a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting on the road, by the road. When he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And many were sternly telling him, be quiet. Did they see him? Oh, I saw him, all right. Just like Simon saw the woman at Jesus' feet. They saw him, all right. Would you shut up? Excuse my bluntness. We're not allowed to say that in my home. Shouldn't say that in a lesson. Because it's rude. And they were being rude to Bartimaeus. They saw him. They heard him. And all they wanted was for him to go away. Simon saw the woman. Simon knew about that woman. And all he wanted was for her to go away. In John 4, Jesus meets a woman at the well and engages that conversation that you all know so well. But on the way to the well, 12 disciples had just walked past her. She's out there at that time of the day almost certainly because other people didn't want her around with the lifestyle that she had been living. The disciples, apparently hadn't said anything to her. They were shocked that Jesus was talking to her at all when they got back. Everybody else just wanted her to go away. You know, we sometimes look at the one end of the spectrum and say and notice that it is often the checkout lady usually and the waitress you have to have a conversation with, but do you notice the busboys? Do you notice the ones cleaning off the tables? We usually think about that end of the spectrum, but there's the other end of the spectrum. Look in Luke 19. Look in Luke 19. There's the other end of the spectrum. This is also Jericho. Luke 19, verse 1. He entered Jericho and was passing through, and there was a man called by the name of... Who's this story about? Luke 19, 1. Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. Zacchaeus was trying to see who Jesus was and was unable because of the crowd, for he was small in stature. So he ran ahead, climbed into a sycamore tree in order to see him, for he was about to pass through that way. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry down, for today I must stay at your house." Did the crowd see Zacchaeus? Well, in this case, we don't even know if they literally saw him. Who? Oh, hi, yeah. We don't know if they literally saw him, but they didn't get out of the way for him. And you can imagine two good reasons. One, he was too short and didn't matter. And two, he was a chief tax collector, extremely unwanted in the community. You see, it's not only the more lonely end, the worker end, the homeless side of things. It's also the lawyer and the business leader and the powerful who we don't want anything to do with either. The rich, oh, you know what they're like. And in this case, all they wanted Zacchaeus to do in their town probably was to go away. I don't want you here. Do you see him? Do you see the other customer? Do you see the other driver? Now, I know you do, but I mean, do you care about him? Because that's really the vision that Jesus is talking about. In these challenges, and what Jesus is showing to us is that when the crowd wanted Bartimaeus to be quiet, Jesus wanted Bartimaeus to be healed and to know him. I don't know what the 12 did on the trail when the Samaritan woman was coming up the road, but they were good, full-blooded Jews, and she's a half-breed. I mean, she's half Jew. And I'll bet you they didn't stand to the side of that trail. I'll bet you they walked right down that trail and made her step to the side with her water jar, as a man might do to any woman in that day, but especially 12 men who thought they were better than her and they were hungry. How many people pass through our lives that we don't see? Your own customer, your neighbor. Literally, we've got homeless in the valley, live homeless out here. The hurting, and as I said, the professionals. You know, one category gets overlooked all the time, in one sense, and that is children. We often overlook the children around us. That's an entirely different lesson, and let Jesus teach us something about that. We'll get into that another time. You all challenge me and impress me when every week you stop and talk to children, reach out to help children. encourage children, connect with children, remember the names of children. There's a challenge for you. Remember the family, the names of the children of this church family. You see, to be a disciple of Christ, if our job is to make disciples out of ourselves, out of each other, and out of those who don't know him, if our job is to disciple Jesus, we need to see like Jesus saw and care like Jesus cared. It's a powerful, powerful thing to touch somebody who isn't being touched. He literally did that with the lepers. He literally did that with the children. He touched them over and over again. John tells us there are many things that Jesus did in his life that were not written here. How many stories like that do you imagine are in Jesus' life when he reached to the person that everybody else just wanted to go away? You're causing us trouble. You're making too much noise. Tell those children to go away. And Jesus said, no, you tell the children to come to me. We can change ordinary lives into extraordinary lives when we introduce people to Jesus. It's the same thing today. It's exactly the same as these situations. Because in every one of these cases, the crowd didn't get it. Whether it was his own disciples or whether it was a larger crowd of people, the crowd completely missed the point. Or in Simon's case, Simon personally himself didn't see what was going on. What a great point of character we can have, that we can treat people with warmth and enthusiasm. That you can greet the person on the other side, the clerk across the counter, the busboy who comes to your table to clean up after your food, the person driving past you on the road, parking next to you in the parking lot, the police officer writing you a ticket. You think he hasn't had a hard enough day? You're going to make it worse. How about a TSA agent? They're not responsible for the policies that are made over their heads. Think about that poor person has to deal with all them grumpy passengers. If you can touch that person for Christ's sake. You see, it's a difference between noticing that there's a person there and seeing a person of need there. Look at John 4, right after Jesus and the woman have a conversation, she runs down into town. She tells the town people about Jesus. The town comes out. And before they come out, John 4:33, the disciples were saying to one another, "No one's brought him anything to eat, did he?" Jesus was talking about how satisfied he had been, that he had food they didn't know about. And Jesus says in 34, John 4:34, in case you didn't catch that, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Do you not say, there are yet 4 months and then comes the harvest? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look at the field. They're white for harvest. Already he who reaps is receiving wages and is gathering fruit for eternal life, so that he who sows and he who reaps may rejoice together. In this case, the saying is true, one sows and another reap. I sent you to reap for that which you have not labored, and others have labored, and you have entered into their labor." Jesus says, you're going to get the benefit of God's work over time, that people have softened hearts, that people are out there seeking God, that people are convicted of who they are and what troubles they have in their lives. And they're just looking for someone to touch them, to connect with them, to care, to see them, really see them. Matthew 9, Jesus gives us a different... Look at Matthew 9. It's a very powerful passage, similar to this. And Jesus talking about... Here he refers to the woman, and he's talking about a Samaritan area, and he's telling his Jewish disciples, you look into Samaria, you look at these towns... The fields are white to harvest. People are hungry to know God. They're desperate to find answers in their lives. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, seeing the people. You see, this is the difference between noticing that there are a lot of people and looking at them with Christ-likeness. This is the difference between having eyes at work and having a heart that's connected to your eyes. Seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were harassed and thrown down like sheep without a shepherd. Now, I put in the maybe more literal Greek meanings there. Harassed and helpless, yours might read. Distressed and dispirited, yours might read. But harassed, it's what a wolf would do, or what loose dogs would do. Not picking on my own Ginger, which we had a nice conversation about. She might give some sheep a hard time. It's what loose dogs, angry dogs or wolves would do to sheep if no one was there to protect them. They would harass them and harass them and harass them. The sheep would have no peace. They would never stop to eat. They would be in distress. Helpless for the outcome. And a sheep that's thrown down, that helplessness, the second word, is what would happen to a big old fat sheep if you flipped it over. They often can't get up on their own, except with great effort and over a great time, and would easily be killed, quickly killed. They don't have the fleet-footed abilities that an antelope would. If you flip one over, they're thrown down, easily killed. Jesus looked at the people and saw that they were harassed like a flock of sheep, and they were helpless like sheep flipped over on their back or thrown down, as it were. And he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful. There's plenty of people who are harassed, helpless, and hurting around us, to put words in his mouth. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. Do you know what chapter 10 is all about? You know what Matthew, we just read the end of Matthew chapter 9. You know what Matthew chapter 10 is all about? Jesus sending his disciples out. He just said, we need to have workers to go out into the harvest. And oh, by the way, guys, go. And he sent them out. He summoned the 12, verse 10, verse 1, and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and heal every kind of disease. And then he went and he sent them out. He showed them the care and compassion, and then he sent them out. It's our position to carry Christ's care and compassion, to show them the beauty of who Christ is and the magnificence of what he did on the cross for us. To bring them to the gospel. To care about their lives. To see what's going on in their lives. And to bring them the gospel. Let's finish our lesson by going back to Luke chapter 7. Jesus praises this woman for what she does to him in Luke chapter 7 after he challenged Simon, do you see this woman? He then describes what she had done for him and was extremely praiseworthy. And he told her, and this is the beauty of what can happen when we introduce people to Christ. He says to her, verse 48, your sins have been forgiven. Those who were reclining at the table with him began to say to themselves, who is this man who even forgives sins? And he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. go in peace. Verse 8, chapter 8. Soon afterwards, he began going around from one city and village to another, proclaiming and preaching the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and sickness. Mary, who was called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out, and Joanna, wife of Cusa, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others who were contributing to their support out of their own private means. Jesus had touched so many lives. His openness, his literal caring, his seeing people who they were, where they were, and what they needed was so powerful that this group of ladies couldn't help but follow him. They were excited to follow him. All around us, the world wants us to put up barriers between us and other people. Satan would love to have us to see and judge other people and push them away socially, racially, situationally, all sorts of things. Satan would love it if we would get judgmental and be finger-pointing. And Jesus said, no, I want you to see them and to love them as I love them. Can we see with Jesus' vision? Simon, do you see this woman? I pray that we can be a congregation who sees the people around us and the beautiful lives they have and the deep needs they have in their lives, and that we can introduce them to Christ. This morning, if there's any here who have not been baptized into Christ, if there's any need in your life that you wish to bring forward to this congregation that we can pray for, whatever it is, it's a beautiful group of people, and they'll do their best to help you out. Whatever your need be, let us know while we stand and sing.